Now for something entirely different. Yes, it's tally-ho this morning on News Talk Breakfast. Some people call it the unspeakable chasing the inedible, but we sent our roving reporter, Kieran Cuddy, to spend a day with the hunt, chasing the foxhounds. Where did you go?
I was down on the Limerick tip border with the Scartine hunt. Now, before I went down, there's hunting, I suppose a lot of people don't know anything about it, but according to the Hunting Association of Ireland, who the governing body of it all, who oversee it, about 300,000 people in Ireland hunt, which is a huge amount. Now, that includes, say, people following on foot, people who hunt on foot, people who are off doing the fencing, that sort of thing. But where I went down, the Limerick tip border, I won't say that again, to the Scartines, the reason I went there is the Scartine hunt have a kind of a unique history themselves. They've existed since 1640, and the same family, the Ryans, have been running the show since then. Their current master, Chris Ryan, he's the ninth generation to be master of the Scartine hunt. Now, they actually as well, they have a connection with one of the most famous, if not the most famous man in Irish history, Daniel O'Connell. Some of the current pack of hounds at Scartine can trace their ancestry back to a pack of hounds that O'Connell himself had.
I mean, he was a real keen hunting fella, and Daniel O'Connell hunted the same type of hound as well, hunting the Kerry Beagle, and he was passionate about his hounds, as all hound people are. And we have letters actually going back from Daniel O'Connell, talking about the attributes, the strengths and weaknesses of some of the hounds that they'd swap over with each other. And the Kerry Beagles, I can see they'd identify well with Daniel O'Connell, very strong in their feet, very independent. Independent and very forthright, very passionate about what they do, and I think Daniel O'Connell was all of the above.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with the Bree hunt, the Island hunt, the Wexford hunt, right across Wexford. How many packs are there? How many hunts are there in
Ireland? There's 100 mounted packs like that around the country. Now, say where you mentioned there, the southeast around Wexford and across the south of the country, that's where they'll be most popular. You'll find most of them there. Leinster and Munster, really, and then in Connacht, you'd have a few.
The Galway Blazers?
The north will be fewer again. So really, it's the south, it's the southern half of the country is where they're most popular. And those hunts would go out, the norm is twice a week, once midweek and once the weekend. Some would go out three times. There's a hunt in Tipperary that goes out four times a week, which is actually an awful lot, because they're all day affairs when you go. Now, when I went along, like I said, it was in Emly in Tipperary is where they're actually hunting out of. They had about 50 people with them, which is the cap. That's as much as they'd have out in a day, the Scartine hunt. But I was curious what Chris had to say about the profile of the people who are hunting with them and why they do it.
The profile of people, yeah, from all sorts of backgrounds. And it's what hunting does to them, what's attractive to them. There is an adrenaline rush, without a shadow of a doubt. I was just reading one of the Sunday papers there, a piece on Peter Clarcy, and a rugby player, Munster, Ireland, the Claw, if you remember, and he hunts a good bit with us, and reading why he goes hunting, and it's the adrenaline rush, and beautifully managed, he just loves it, and it's rural Ireland at its at play, if you like. And you see it there today, Kieran, and the anticipation, going out in a day like this, which is not comfortable, and yet the anticipation, putting your neck and the neck of your horse to every bank and ditch you're going to meet there today, and see what a horse can do. And of course, the Irish horse, hunting has made the Irish horse what he is, and a world brand.
But is there not a snob factor? Is it not the gentry on jodhpurs, I mean, with their nip of whiskey before they set out? Or, I mean, it's expensive to keep a hunter.
Yeah, it is expensive enough. Like Chris said there was a mix, and I was spoken to a mix of people. There were some tradesmen there, some auctioneers, a couple of civil servants. But they also had a couple of people from outside Ireland, actually, and that's where they make a bit, that's where they subsidise. They get a bit of money out of that because people...
Well, of course, it is banned in the UK.
Well, yeah, they do drag hunting in the UK where they lay out a scent, kind of, and so they know exactly what kind of route they're going to take before. But people from the US as well coming in will pay a bit, and that kind of keeps the cost down for people locally. But I actually, on that issue you mentioned, I was talking to a fellow called Dickie Power about that. He's a member of the Scartine Hunts, he's also secretary of the Hunting Association, and he talked about the misconceptions, I suppose, some people have about those who hunt.
stuck up toffs. This is the perception. Well, I mean, I was fodder and cattle before I came here this morning, and so were most of the others. The girl across the road is an emergency nurse. Her assistant is still at school. They're all working people who get on with it, and in many cases sacrifice a lot to hunt, you know, both in terms of time and money.
So it's for everyone.
Oh, absolutely. There's no sport that has such a diverse following. I mean, with that man there, retired professor, you have another guy who's a former postman. You have anything and everything.
Now, there's also beagling. I've been beagling, where they have no horses. Do you just follow the hound around on foot?
They follow it on foot, yeah. Now, that's what I was doing on the day was a mounted pack. So these were following it on horseback. But actually, uniquely, most packs that are mounted, they'll have English foxhounds is what they're chasing. But the Scartine Hunt have Kerry Beagles. You heard Chris mention it there earlier. Kerry Beagles, they're the only pack who hunt with beagles like that on horseback.
What colour are they?
They're black and tan.
Yeah, because the normal foxhound is white, brown and black.
Yeah, exactly.
But tails are erect.
Yeah, well, these are the black and tan Kerry Beagles. And the tradition, actually, where they come from is if between kind of Dingle and Kenmare, the tradition would have been along there that people would bring their beagle to Mass, and after Mass, then they go hunting with them, and then they take their beagle home. So that's where you kind of got packs and hunting, as you said, on foot. But this is a mounted pack with them. We followed them on the day, and they did quite a bit of hunting. Like, they chased quite a few foxes, and this is where I suppose we get to the issue that's more controversial for people, whether they actually, you know, hunting foxes and possibly killing them. And I talked to Chris about it. Now, whether you agree with him or not, what he was saying was that they'll never catch and kill a healthy fox. A healthy fox will always get away. It's too clever, it's too agile. Plus, vixens and whelp don't have a scent. Pups don't have a scent, so the hounds will never go after them. They just won't smell them. So it's only healthy adults, and the only foxes they'll catch and kill would be old or infirm. Now, for some people, that's still cruel. They shouldn't do it. But look, whether you agree or not, that's the line that Chris said, that, you know, they'll only kill old and infirm foxes. On the day, they didn't kill any. They did quite a bit of hunting, crossed quite a bit of land. And actually, that was another interesting aspect that I wanted to touch on, because they crossed a huge amount of farmland. And I wondered kind of how local farmers felt about 50 horses.
Yeah, let me read out a text here from Robert. I never allowed the hunt on my land. They don't care if the land is wet and the damage they do and the poor fencing of holes they make in ditches. They should just damage their own property and not others.
Yeah, look, that's they have to, there's 50 horses, like, and they do, that's, you're going to notice the 50 horses go through your land. Now, what people in the Scartine said is, actually, in a wet day, it's nearly better, because if it's wet afterwards, the land will kind of soften down again. You know, you won't notice it as quickly. It says if it's drier, like, it really does dig up the land. Now, they'd have people are meant to, now, I can't speak for every hunt that's out there, I don't know, but people are meant to go on and open up fences beforehand and then repair them afterwards. They have people who are employed to do this. But I did speak to farmers who were there on the day. One of them, James Lonergan, he was a real gent. He invited me into his cowshed when it started, the rain got really torrential, and he shared with me his attitude as a farmer down there in Emly to the hunt.
Around the village this morning, even, I know it's a bad morning, but the people were just so anxious to see the hounds and the hunt itself come round the place. So it's hard to describe it. It's just an annual thing, and it's going on generations and generations, and everyone just loves to see the hunt come round the place, right? They'll come in, there'll be a sight to behold coming in the passage and coming up to the field. They'll be unreal. They'll go up the fields, stick by the ditches, going up the fields. They'll go over the fences, they'll take down the wire. When they're out, they'll close the gates and put up the wire again, and they'll okay with it with you beforehand. As I said, the actual hunt themselves are so, so, so thankful for what you do. And that means so much from a farmer point of view, because it is your livelihood, like, it is your business. So you really have to look after that. Like, but tomorrow you won't even know they're inside her.
That's James Lonergan, a local farmer down there. Now, the Scartines, they hunt their whole area is about 30 by 35 miles, and there's about 1,200 farmers in the database, so they really do need the cooperation of local farmers. But of course, there will be some like that man who texted in and won't let them in, just doesn't want the damage in the land. But I want to just finish with an issue that James brought up himself after that. He just made the point that farming has become really a one-man show, and often you're on the farm on your own for long periods of time. But when the hunt comes through, he's saying, it's a great social occasion. There's people on the farm. There's more people on the farm than there ever would be on any other day of the year. And Chris also touched on this. Like, we've talked on the show here about rural isolation and what a problem it's becoming in some communities. But according to Chris, the hunt at least does something to tackle it.
Rural Ireland has got pretty isolated. Here, where you're sitting, we've lost our local bank. We've lost countless stores and shops and services. And farming has become very insular and alone, if you like. I suppose in the old days, when you'd be taking your milk to the creamery and you'd be meeting the lads, and that doesn't happen anymore. Now the hunt coming through to Emily, there's a lovely bit of excitement, there's a lovely spark, and you see people out there today and with a real interest. And what's happening? There's a hunt on in Emily there today, and it's a focus of attention, and it gets you out perhaps. Put all the troubles in the back of your head there for a wee while, and you see the sight, and it's a pretty impressive sight, the hounds and the horses and the hunting. And I don't know, perhaps it's a kind of escapism that we all need at times.
That's our package from the Scartine hunt there on the Limerick-Tipperary border. Do tell me, Ciarán Cuddy, that you didn't wear that exotic pink jumper when you went down to see our country cousins.
What? No, this is my camouflage jumper.
You're wearing this blindingly, it's dazzlingly.
For people who can't see, it's red and white. Like, you know what I mean? It's just your bad eyesight kind of mixes it together and thinks it's pink. They're very distinctive, two different colours in it.
Right. I don't think it's pink. Yes, I wouldn't be wearing that to the Scartine hunt anyway. Ciarán Cuddy with that package, thank you.
And Pat Kenny, you can hear him there. He is